This book contains up to 4 sides per cassette. Side 1, RC-48966, Marlfox by Brian Jakes, illustrated by Fanghorn. Text copyright 1998 by the Redwall Abbey Company Limited. Read by David Palmer. This book contains 386 pages on 8 sides. If you would like to skip over any remaining announcements or introductory material, place your cassette player and fast forward until a beep is heard. Stop at that point to hear the table of contents, or at the second beep to locate the beginning of the book. Library of Congress Annotation. Redwall Abbey is attacked by the Marlfoxes, who plunder a wondrous tapestry for their mother, Queen Sylph. Young squirrels Dan and Song and the shrew Dippler are joined by the water bull Burble in their perilous quest to return the wall hanging to its proper place. Companion to Redwall, RC-29729, for grades 5 through 8, 1998. From the book jacket, a villainous new presence is a prowl in Mossflower Woods, the Marlfoxes. Stealthy, mysterious, they can disappear at any time, in any place, and they are out to plunder and destroy everything in their path. And when they reach Redwall Abbey, they ruthlessly steal the most precious treasure of all, the tapestry of Martin the Warrior. It takes Dan Raguba and Song Swifteye, children of warrior squirrels, to follow in their father's heroic footsteps, and together with the young shrewd Dippler and Burble, the brave water bull, they embark upon the seemingly impossible quest to recover the famous tapestry. Enemies and danger greet their every move as they make their way to the ominous island domain of the evil Marlfox leader, Queen Sylph, and her children. But they are met most dramatically by themselves as they prove their own courage and worth and discover the hero's spirit that lives within each one of them. Once again, Brian Jakes expands the marvelous world of Redwall, introducing a host of new characters, and this time celebrating the courage of the very youngest heroes. About the author. Brian Jakes began writing his beloved Redwall tales to entertain the children at Liverpool School for the Blind. Unbeknownst to him, a former teacher showed one of his manuscripts to a publisher, who saw the genius in it. Thus began the Redwall series, of which Marlfox is the 11th volume. A consummate storyteller, Mr. Jakes lives in Liverpool, where he continues to spin his magnificent tales, and is now at work creating another chapter in the Redwall saga. In addition to this series, he has written 7 Strange and Ghostly Tales, a collection of ghost stories, and The Great Redwall Feast, an illustrated storybook with pictures by Christopher Denise. Other books by Brian Jakes: Mossflower, Matameo, Mariel of Redwall, Salamandastron, Martin the Warrior, The Bellmaker, Outcast of Redwall, The Pearls of Lutra, The Long Patrol, The Redwall Map and Riddler. To the memory of a true Redwall friend and talented illustrator, Alan Curlis. Act 1, Enter the Players, Side 1. Act 2, Four Chieftains Going Forth, Side 3. Act 3, The Queen's Island, Side 6. Reader's Note: the map found in the print edition is not included in this recording. End of note. To where will they go? This is a secret no beast may know. Marlfox. Plundering, murdering, vulpine thieves who blend with stone or meld with leaves. Marlfox. See the pale eyes and swirling cloak appear like nightmare, vanish like smoke. Marlfox. What steals upon the silent air, gleaming fangs, mottled fur, a deadly axe blade lying there? Marlfox. No beast living can hide from thee, O thou who treads invisibly, cross hill and vale, through woods and rocks. Marlfox, Marlfox, Marlfox. Prologue. Who are we but strolling players, wandering through the long ago? Joys and sadness, hopes and longings, keep us traveling onward, though the laughter and applause of others who view the passing cavalcade leave echoes hovering some far summer, floating round a woodland glade. 'Twas but a tale for your amusement, like my small unworthy rhyme, gone, alas, into those realms, the land of once upon a time. Act 1. Enter the players. 1. Eternally serene, the moon ruled over star-strewn vaults of cloudless sable night, like a round shield of flecked amber, casting pale light to the earth below. Vagrant breezes from the distant sea drifted idly through Mossflower Wood's southwest margins, cooling the heavy warmth the bright summer day had left in its wake. Janglor Swifteye sat at the edge of a well-worn trail, his back against the broad trunk of a fallen elm, savoring the calm summer night. He was an unusual squirrel, half as tall again as most of his species, with dark terracotta fur, untypically long and thick. A huge bush of tail added to the impression of his size. Beneath the fur, Janglor's limbs were hefty and robust, with a stomach of considerable girth, which his mother constantly chided him about. His eyes were hooded and long-lashed, giving the impression he was always half asleep. However, any beast who knew Janglor Swifteye was careful not to be fooled by his air of easy-going idleness. He was renowned as a quick and dangerous warrior, immensely strong and wise in the ways of battle. But there was another side to him. He was also an obedient son, a dutiful husband, and a fond father. In the woodlands behind him, his family slept in their little traveling tent, his mother Elio, his wife Rimrose, and Songbreeze, the daughter who was the apple of her father's eye. From beneath half-closed lids, Janglor Swifteye watched, missing nothing. Clusters of flowering dock nodded lightly against gnarled oak trunks. Orange-berried arums and spiking-flowered sedge swayed lazily between elder, chestnut, and sycamore trees. Nocturnal insects trundled or winged their various ways through the darkened forest. From somewhere deep in the thickets, a nightingale warbled its short, rich trill. Janglor whistled a reply to it on his reed flute, aware that some beast was creeping up behind him. The only move he made was to blink away a midge from his eyelashes. He knew who the intruder was by the way she approached. Janglor chuckled. "I hear you, missy. Couldn't sleep, eh?" His daughter Songbreeze climbed slowly over the elm trunk and slid down beside him. "No beast could ever surprise you, old Swifteye. Phew! It's far too hot to sleep. And Grandma's snoring like a score of hedgehogs after a feast." Janglor winked lazily at her. "Ha! Listen who's talking. You should hear yourself snoring some nights. Drowns your grandma's poor efforts out completely." She shoved her father playfully. "I do not. Young squirrel maids don't snore. Ask Mom." Janglor snorted softly. "Your mother's worse than both of you put together." The nightingale warbled its short melody again. Janglor picked up his reed flute. "Listen to that feller. Thinks he can sing. Come on, Song, show him." No creature who knew the tall, pretty squirrel ever used her full name. Janglor played a brief introduction, then Song's voice rang out with such sweetness and clarity that a tear coursed its way down her father's cheek. Her voice never failed to move him. "Flowers of the forest are bright in the spring. Wake with the dawn, hear a lone skylark sing. Brooks gaily babble o'er hillsides so green, streams ripple secrets of what they have seen. Small birds give voice mid the leaves of great trees, which rustle softly in time with the breeze. I'll add my music for what it is worth, and sing just for you, love, the song of the earth." As the last plaintive notes died away, Janglor put aside his flute and wiped a paw quickly across his eyes. Song nudged him gently. "Big tough warrior, eh? Crying again?" Her father sniffed aloud, looking away from her. "Don't be silly. 'Twas just a midge went in me eye. But I couldn't play for you and wipe it out at the same time. Had to wait till you were finished singing." In another part of the woodland, two foxes ceased their prowl through the undergrowth and listened to the sweet, plaintive melody floating faintly on the night air. Both beasts were identical. Apart from the fact that they were brother and sister, they were alike in every other aspect. Askrod and his sister Vannon were marl foxes, pale-eyed with strained silver-white coats, heavily mottled with patches of black and bluey-gray. They wore swirling cloaks of drab brown and green weave. Askrod's lips scarcely moved as he muttered to his sister, "That singer warbles more sweetly than any bird I ever heard." Vannon's pale eyes glimmered in the moonlight. "Aye, brother, and would trill even better at the court of our mother, Queen Sylph. Come on." In the space of a breath, both marl foxes were gone, melted back into the night-shaded forest like tendrils of smoke on the wind. Song plucked a blade of grass and tickled her father's ear-tip. "Big old softy. Come on, play a lively tune, and I'll put a smile back on your face, eh?" But Janglor was not paying attention to her. He stiffened, both ears twitching as he sniffed the breeze. Song caught the urgency of his mood. "What is it? Can you hear something?" Janglor's hooded eyes flickered. He watched the trees on the opposite side of the path, talking quietly, not looking at his daughter as he continued scanning the woodlands. "Go quick to your mama, Song, and tell him to be silent. And stay put. Hurry now." Song had seen her father like this before. She knew better than to stop and argue with him. Wordlessly, she slipped away to the tent. Janglor took a dangerous-looking thorn dart, tufted with dried grass, from his belt pouch. Placing the missile in his mouth, he tucked it against one cheek, then sat back against the elm trunk. Idly, he began playing his reed flute. Outwardly, the big squirrel appeared calm, but inside he was poised like lightning, ready to strike. In a short while, he made out the two foxes, moving expertly from a patch of fern to the cover of some bushes, coming closer to him by the moment. Janglor took the flute from his lips, calling out sternly, "Quit sneaking about, and walk on the path like decent creatures." Askrod and Vannon had thought the squirrel was unaware of their approach. They hid their surprise by putting on a bold front, swaggering up to where Janglor sat. Askrod kicked the squirrel's footpaw, just hard enough to warn him that he and his sister were well in charge of the situation. "You there, who was that singing a short while ago?" Janglor did not bother to look up at Askrod, though his voice was menacingly low. "None of your business, Snipe Nose. Now get going, and take that other one with you." Bannon winked at her brother, and smiled nastily as her paw began to stray toward the single-bladed axe she carried beneath her cloak. Janglor appeared to ignore them and went back to playing his flute. Askrod leaned close to the squirrel, baring his teeth. "You're very insolent for a fat, lazy squirrel. Shall I show you what we do to beasts with insulting tongues?" "Phut!" Janglor Swifteye shot the dart from his flute, burying it deep in the tip of Askrod's nose. As the fox shrieked out in agony, Janglor sprang upright. Whipping forth a loaded sling from around his waist, he hurled himself upon Vannon, who had her axe halfway out. She went down in an unconscious heap, as the hard oval river pebble and the sling's tongue thwacked heavily across her skull. Askrod was hop-skipping about wildly, both paws clapped across his muzzle, as he screeched with pain.
"Yeek! Yareek!"
"Tails and scuts preserve us all! Who's kicking up that awful din?" Shaking with anger, Janglor turned to see his family dashing toward him, with Elio in the lead, brandishing a blackthorn stick. Janglor stared accusingly at his daughter. "Song, I thought I told you to stay put and keep them quiet." Rimrose placed herself between them. "'Twern't no fault of Song's. You just try stopping that old mama of yours when she starts swinging that stick." Jangler's paw shot out. He caught the tip of his mother's stick and held it tight. Heaving on the blackthorn and stumbling on her long apron hem, the old squirrel wife berated her son.
"Let go of my stick, you great boulder-bellied tree walloper! Let go, or I'll spank 10 seasons' daylights out of ye!"
Song giggled and clapped her paws.
"That's the stuff, Grandma. You give him a good spanking."
Rimrose wagged a paw at her daughter.
"That'll be quite enough of that, Missy. Show some proper respect for your elders."
Then, unable to prevent herself, she fell against Song, laughing helplessly.
"Oh, hee-hee-hee. It'd be a funny sight to see your Grandma giving that great lump a spank or two. Hee-hee."
Grandma Elio let go of the stick and turned on Song and Rimrose, attempting to look fierce as she hid a smile.
"Ha! Don't you two think I couldn't tan his tail if and I took a mind to do it? I'm still his mother, you know."
Janglor lifted his mother clear of the ground, hugging her fondly.
"You can skelp the fur off of me any time you wants to, my lovely old bark belter. Why, I'll bet you could..."
Song interrupted suddenly.
"Look, the foxes are gone."
All that remained of the marl fox's visit was a few drops of blood from Askrod's muzzle, glistening darkly amid the disturbed dust of the path. Janglor peered into the dark woodlands.
"Aye, they've got away somehow. Won't catch them now. They've vanished. He put a paw about his daughter's shoulders. Mark what I say, Song. They're marl foxes. Strange blood runs in their veins. They can disappear like no other living creature. Come on, ladies. We best break camp and get traveling. Jangler's family had been wanderers since he was in his infancy, and breaking camp was a simple affair to them. Once the canvas they used as a tent had been folded, their few cooking implements were rolled in it to form a backpack. In the pre-dawn light, they breakfasted on clear stream water and a traveling fruit and honey cake that Rimrose had baked 2 days before.
Grandma, what's a marl fox?
Asked Song between mouthfuls.
Elio tried to explain.
The story goes back a long ways. 'Tis far too long to tell in a short time, but I'll tell you this much, Missy. Somewhere there's a forgotten lake, a great stretch of deep water, almost an inland sea, some beasts say. That's where the marl foxes live, and the most cunning of them all, if and she still lives, is Queen Silth. Aye, they call her the most powerful magic creature alive. 'Tis said her island is a place of great riches and beauty. I heard all this from a poor creature who was set upon by a bunch of magpies while fishing off the island.
Elio fell silent, and Jangler said,
Don't bother your grandma further, Song. If marl foxes are loose in the land, you may learn more than you bargained for. Pick up that linen now. We need to be traveling. North and east a touch, I reckon.
Song folded the small tablecloth, which she had embroidered herself.
What lies in that direction, Father?
Jangler shouldered the tent pack, settling it comfortably on his back.
The Abbey of Redwall.
The young squirrel maid's eyes grew wide with delight. She had never visited there, though she had heard tales of the fabulous place.
Redwall Abbey? How wonderful! Oh, Mama, will it be as nice as you told me it was when I was little?
Rimrose smiled at her daughter's excitement.
Even nicer, I imagine. Words can't fully describe a place like Redwall.
Song took Grandma Elio's paw, supporting her as they walked. With Jangler in the lead, they set off as dawn was breaking. It promised to be another hot summer day, but the tree canopy was thick and would shade them as the sun rose higher. Song could not resist a final question to her father.
Why are we going to Redwall?
Jangler tucked the reed flute into his broad belt.
Because we must warn whoever rules at the abbey that there are marl foxes roaming the land.
2. Farther south, on the flatlands, close to the woodland fringe, a gaily painted cart stood propped straight on its two large wheels. It had a single shaft, cross-treed at the end by a well-worn pushing bar. Stretched over willow hoops, a canvas cover was copiously painted in once bright colors, now faded by sun and seasons, though the lettering still read clearly. The sensational wandering Noonvale Companions Troop. On the nearby stream bank, a motley collection of creatures were preparing for a rehearsal. One of them, a theatrical-looking hare, stood forward. He was clad in a rumpled frock coat of lilac silk and a wide-brimmed straw hat, through which his enormous ears poked. He wore floppy yellow boots and carried a silver-tipped cane. The hare's outfit had obviously seen better seasons, as had the cart and the entire troop. Nevertheless, the hare twirled his cane and boomed out in fine dramatic fashion, as if addressing a vast audience.
Good morrow, one and all. I am Florian Dugglewolf Wolfachop, impresario and hactor manager. I present to you the sensational wandering Noonvale Companions Troupe, descendants of a talented tradition, unrivaled throughout the entire land. Death-defying feats, hilarious comical plays, music and magical virtuosity, jocular jigs and delightful dancing. Come one, come all. Witness our mellifluously marvelous, perfectly pleasurable educational entertainment. Entirely free of charge.
He smiled winningly and continued in a loud stage whisper.
Homemade cakes, pasties, and sundry comestibles, purely for the nourishment of the artistes, gladly accepted, with profuse thanks.
From the cover of the cart, a gruff voice interrupted Florian's speech impatiently.
Oh, go on with it, afore us all falls asleep.
The hare shot an outraged glance at the cart and snorted. Turning back to his imaginary audience, he beamed.
And now, my bucolic friends, good wives and rustic spouses, not forgetting your charming young'uns, we reach our finale, the very climax of our prodigious performance. Barnacle Iron Chest and Ellicom Oak Paw, the two strongest hotters ever born, will attempt a daring display of muscle power, which I myself have seen kill 10 other lesser beasts. If you are of a nervous nature, kindly look away, as swooning and fainting may distract the heartiest's attention. These two mighty marvels will lift the entire, I repeat, the entire, disregarding my good self, of course, they will lift the entire wandering Noonvale Companions troop off the ground. Two burly otters, wearing tawdry gold-fringed pantaloons, skipped athletically forward, flexing their muscles and bowing, puffing forth their chests and showing rows of white teeth and daredevil smiles. They performed a few limbering-up exercises and then went about their business. Seizing both ends of a long wooden bench, they started, with a great show of huffing and puffing, to lift. Standing on the bench were two moles, one dressed in spangled red bloomers, the other in a cloak and turban of jade green. Lying gracefully across the heads of the two moles was a mouse wearing a coronet of imitation flowers and a flowing sky-blue gown. Skillfully perched on one paw, placed upon the mouse's midriff, a hedgehog balanced precariously, his spikes tipped with a mass of pennants, small flags and bunting. Up, up went the bench, with all aboard it wobbling perilously. The hare, Florian, muttered encouragement in a loud stage whisper.
"Keep it going up, chaps. That's the ticket. Every beast remain still now. Hold your positions. Up she goes, what?"
Barnacle and Ellicom grunted and strained artistically until they had finally lifted the bench over their heads. Suddenly Barnacle gave out a tremendous bellow.
"Yowch!"
He released his hold on the bench and grabbed at his rear. Amid howls of dismay, the troop and the bench came to earth in jumbled disarray. Florian dashed forward, furious. Down on all fours he berated Barnacle, who lay trapped by the bench, still clutching his bottom.
"Great seasons of sausages, you blithering bang-tailed buffoon! Why did you let the valley bench drop?"
Crimson-faced, Barnacle gasped.
"Because that perishing mouse babe shot me with a slingstone."
Florian Dugglewolf Whiffachop drew himself to his full height, ears twitching, teeth grinding audibly.
"Oh-ho, he did he? Well, 'tis high time I had a serious encounter with that blistering, undersized miscreant. Dwopple, come out of that cart, front and center, this instant." "Out, I say, sir."
Florian strode resolutely forward, but the mouse in the blue gown suddenly flung herself dramatically in front of the cart. One paw outstretched, the other across her brow, she declaimed,
"Oh, Mr. Florian, I beseech you, sir, touch not a hair of that babe's tender head. Do nothing you will reproach yourself for in the sunlit seasons lying ahead. Hear a pitiful mother's plea, and punish not the harmless innocent. Spare him, I beg of you."
Runktip, the hedgehog, chortled bitterly as he removed the bunting from his spikes.
"Dwopple, a harmless innocent? Huh, that'n's about as harmless as a bucket of serpents and a sack of stoats. And you ain't his mother, Deesum. You're only his auntie."
Deesum shot Runktip a haughty glance.
"A mere detail. Do not quibble, sir. No mother could love a babe as I love Dwopple. Come to me, my precious little mite."
Clambering into the cart, she grabbed a small fat mouse babe, who wore a stained oversized smock and a wicked scowl. Hanging from one of his grubby paws was a miniature slingshot. He wriggled and kicked desperately as Deesum smothered him with kisses.
"Grah! Let go of Dwopple! Stop a-kissing me! Brr!"
Ellicom the otter massaged a bruised paw as he glared at the infant.
"You steaming little nit, Dwopple! You ruined our rehearsal!"
Florian interrupted sternly.
"Indeed you have, you young rip-curdle. Apologize to the entire troop this very flippin' instant. Say you're sorry, sir."
From over Deesum's shoulder, Dwopple grinned fiendishly at the company.
"A soggy."
The hare squinched his eyes at Dwopple.
"Beg pardon, what did you say?"
Deesum stamped her paw impatiently.
"He said he's sorry. Isn't that good enough for you?"
Would you like the little fellow to shed salt tears and roll in the dust? Isn't the word sorry satisfactory to a heartless driving taskmaster like you?
Florian threw up his paws in despair.
Chah! I suppose it'll have to be, what?
Deason patted the mouse babe's back reassuringly.
There now, my little treasure. They've all forgiven you. Isn't that nice? Will you give them all a big kiss?
The hedgehog Runtip backed off with a horrified face.
Let that little savage kiss me? No thanks. He'd probably bite the snout off me.
Florian waggled his cane severely at Dwapple.
Absolutely no need to go kissing and hugging every beast. Just behave yourself in future, Milado. Particularly at rehearsals, what?
Turning on his heel, the hare strode grandiloquently off, only to be hit sharply on his bob tail by a missile from Dwapple's sling.
Yowooch! Bandit, fiend, pollywoggle, scallywag! I'll have your tail for breakfast, sir.
The sight of Florian's enraged face set Dwapple crying in distress.
Maha! Nasty wabbit gonna eat Dwapple's tail! Boo-hoo-hoo! Me only a lick a baby! Wah-ha-ha!
Deesim hugged the mouse babe closer to her as she rounded on Florian.
You callous monster! Fancy frightening the poor little fellow like that!
Florian flung his hat down and danced upon it.
Madam, I'll have you know that wretch shot me in the posterior and called me a rabbit to boot.
Deesim stamped her paw hard.
Enough. One more word, sir, and I'll resign from your troop and take baby Dwapple with me.
Roop, the mole and the spangled bloomers, shook his head dolefully, grumbling in his curious mole speech.
Her, no such luck, I don't suppose, Berno.
Muggle, the other mole, gathered up a pail and trundled toward the stream. She wrinkled her velvety snout at her companions.
He can stand your arguing all day. I'm going to get breakfast victuals readied. Bain't going to wear my jaws out of shouting.
Florian, who liked to issue all the orders, coughed officiously.
Ahem, rather. Just what I was about to suggest myself. Right, troop, breakfast. Elikim, get a fire going. Runtip, see to the larder. The rest of you make yourselves busy, what? Quick's the word and sharp's the action, what?
Runtip spread the meager rations on the backside, where Muggle was boiling water over the small fire Elikim had kindled. The hedgehog scratched his head spikes.
Ain't enough grub left to keep a fat bumblebee going.
Deesim glanced at the two shriveled apples, dandelion stalks, a stale loaf of rye bread, which had crumbled into pieces, and some half a dozen withered field mushrooms.
Oh, seasons of mercy on us! The babe will starve!
Ever the optimist, Florian began chopping the scanty provisions up and tossing them into the pail of bubbling water.
Nonsense, marm! Fiddlesticks! Nature's bounty has provided us with sufficient food for a nourishing broth. Let's all eat hearty and look forward to better, more prosperous times, what?
The soup was dreadful, but knowing there was nothing else, the wandering Noonvale companion spooned it down in stoic silence until Runtip began eulogizing on past dishes he had eaten, as hungry hedgehogs will invariably do.
Crispy hot white bread, straight out of the oven. That's the stuff. Goes down a treat with some good yellow nut cheese and young onions fresh picked, all washed down with a foamy beaker of dark ale. Ho-ho! A feast fit for a king, I say.
Boracle, the otter, closed his eyes dreamily.
Piping hot scones, matey. Spread with meadow cream and served with fat juicy strawberries, coated in honey, with a flagon of cold cider, of course. Now that's a feast fit for a king.
Rube picked something dubious out of his soup bowl, wrinkling his nose as he flicked the offending item into the stream.
Why? Well, seeing as how you'm to bite kings, why don't ye use your mouths for eating, and not making us'ns hungrier?
The mouse babe, Dwapple, picked up his bowl and began toddling off. Deesim chided her charge brusquely.
Dwapple, come back here. Where are you taking that soup?
Dwapple nodded to a rock-strewn knoll along the stream bank.
This soup not good for babies. Gonna give him to the Foskers.
Delicum stared at Dwapple quizzically.
Foskers?
Deesim translated.
He means foxes.
Florian was immediately on the alert.
Foxes? What foxes? Where?
Another pair of Morrow foxes, identical to the two who had accosted Janglor, rose up from amid the rocks where they had lain watching the companions since dawn. Their names were Jeltor and Predak, brother and sister. Seeing they had been spotted, the pair approached the camp boldly, their drab cloaks flapping slightly in the light morning breeze. Boracle cautioned his friends, keeping an eye on the strange pair.
"Careful, mates. They're carrying axes under those cloaks."
Florian stood up.
"Steady in the ranks, chaps. Leave this to me.
I'll do the talking. See those strange markings? I reckon I heard about these creatures, but I never thought I'd have the bad luck to see them for myself. Marl foxes, they're called. Bad beasts."
The foxes stopped a few paces short of the group. Florian walked cautiously out and greeted them.
"Good day, friends. Beautiful summer morning, what?"
Jeltor, the male fox, nodded slightly before speaking.
"Who are you, and where do you go?"
Florian bowed eloquently, sweeping off his hat with a flourish.
"As you can see by our, cart, we are the Wandering Noonvale Companions, a purely theatrical group of talented creatures."
Predak, the female, moved closer to the fire.
"What's in the pot?"
Deesim dipped a short curtsy.
"It's a sort of soupy broth. You're welcome to join us."
Predak leaned over the pot and sniffed. She wrinkled her muzzle disgustedly.
"Slops."
Boracle picked up a large pebble and tossed it from paw to paw.
"No beasts forcing you to eat it, and you aren't asked to insult it either. Good manners don't cost much, fox."
Predak's paw edged toward her cloak.
"Mayhap I'll teach you a few manners, river dog."
Florian was quickly between them.
"Tush and pish, what's all this?"
Predak drew her paw away from the axe beneath her cloak.
"You've told us who you are, but you never said where you were going."
The hare waved a paw airily.
"Oh, thither and yon, you know, thither and yon. A traveling show like ours doesn't actually go anywhere. We roam as the mood takes us. But you, friend, will you tell us your names, and where you are bound on this summer's day, what?"
The Marl Fox's pale eyes stared insolently at the hare.
"What we are called is not your concern, and where we go is no beast's business."
Florian Dugglewolf Wolfenchop's ears quivered with indignation.
"So-ho! It's bad manners and insult time, is it? Well, listen to me, you pot-bellied, pickle-nosed, louse-bound patchquilts. You can both take a run and dive into that stream and boil your fat heads. And furthermore, you can take your mange-ridden hides out of our camp before I assist you with a stout right boot. Good day to you both."
Jeltor had his axe half-drawn when the otter Elikum picked up a thick pole used in a balancing act and flicked the air in front of the fox's face with it.
"I wouldn't draw that axe if I was you, matey. This pole cracks heads easier than it does eggs."
Predak found herself facing Boracle, holding his big pebble ready to throw, and backed by the two moles brandishing burning sticks from the fire. Runktip dashed across to the cart and dragged out a long shining sword, a stage prop that bent and flopped about comically.
"Now back off, both of you, or get ready to find out the color of your own insides. Move!"
The Marl foxes knew they were outflanked and outnumbered, and backed off toward the rocks. Jeltor pointed at the troop and snarled,
"We'll meet again, but 'twill be different next time."
Florian threw the hem of his frock coat up across one shoulder and called back in an outrageously dramatic voice,
"Indeed it will be different. The land will be rid of two rogues when next we cross paths. Mark my words, you spotty villains."
Predak pointed beyond the troop and shouted,
"We're not the only two here. There are others behind you."
The entire troop turned and scanned the landscape. After a moment or two, Florian scoffed.
"Not an earthly sight of any beast. What do they think we are to fall for that one, a bunch of oafs, what?"
When they turned back again, the two Marl foxes had vanished, as if into thin air. Florian sighed.
"Wish we could learn that trick. Ah, well, comrades, onward, ever onward."
Deesim was still looking about fearfully.
"Onward to where?"
With a great flourish, the hare kicked the cooking pot over, letting the meager broth spill into the stream.
"Why, onward to Redwall Abbey, of course, my dear. Where else?"
Roop chuckled and rubbed his stomach gleefully.
"I dearly loves ye vittles at Redwall Abbey."
Florian issued the orders.
"Attention, troop! Load up the cart. Boracle, Elikum, In the shafts, please. Runk Tip, you and I will walk behind, armed with poles to protect our rear. The rest of you ride in the cart. We must get the news to Redwall. There are marl foxes in the land.
As late morning heat shimmered on the flatlands, and grasshoppers chirped dryly beneath a hot summer sun, the cart trundled off toward Mossflower Wood, with the entire company singing.
Oh, for the open road, no dullard's life for me. The world is my abode, performing endlessly. I'm free, companions we. Travel the highways happily, performing deeds of daring do, and plays of heroes good and true. Tumbling, singing in merry attire, pray tell me, sir, what's your desire? Come fiddledum, twiddledum, derry-down-day, a harum, scarum, hoop-a-la-hay. Come one, come all, this day to see the wandering Noonvale Company.
At the very heart of Mossflower Country, the vastness of lordly, wide-trunked trees gave way to an expansive water meadow, formed in a wide, shallow basin at the juncture of two streams. Mid-afternoon heat haze shimmered on the far margin as Logalog, chieftain of the Gwasim, stood waist-deep at the fringe of the tall reeds with his shrews. Though usually a loud, argumentative band, the guerrilla union of shrews and Mossflower were unusually quiet. Each small, scruffy, furred fighter, equipped with vari-colored headband and short rapier, watched their leader as he parted bulrush and marshwort. Raising himself on tip-paw, Logalog shaded his eyes, peering about over the reaches of water-lily, crowfoot, and brookweed. A large striped dragonfly hovered near the shrew chieftain's face, investigating him. He growled at it. "Buzz off!" Surprisingly, it did. He watched a brown trout fin idly by him, just beneath the surface. Logalog wished that he could forget his tribe's troubles and go fishing. Behind him, a young shrew chewed noisily at some watercress, and Logalog turned and fixed him with a severe stare. The young Gwasim shrew stopped chewing and swallowed guiltily. An older shrew pointed across Logalog's shoulder. "Over there, chief." Logalog's eyes narrowed as he turned and stared searchingly out over the sun-stilled reaches of the water meadow. Over at the eastern edge, by a stand of weeping willows, an oar poked itself in the air, waving back and forth thrice. He cupped both paws around his mouth and let forth a long, ululating call. "Logga, logga, logga, logga!" Immediately the shrews behind him relaxed and began chattering. "That'll be Bargle and the others. Then the coast may be clear, eh? Well, the chief wouldn't have called if 'twasn't Stump Ed." Logalog followed as they waded back onto dry ground, still disputing and debating. "Stump Ed yourself, Wobble Snout. How do you know they ain't still around? Wobble Snout, listen, matey. If I had a snout like yours, I'd keep me gob shut about others. Maybe Bargle was alone. The others might have been ambushed." "Nah, Splicker was with him. He wouldn't let himself get ambushed." "Oh, wouldn't he, then? Remember that time by the South Rapids? Stow the gab and latch your lips, mates. Mayan, see to the victuals." Logalog stamped up onto the bank, shaking water from himself. The shrews were seated in a circle, three deep, when Bargle and his scouts came in. Logalog motioned them to sit and help themselves to a beaker of rough cider each and some wedges of white celery cheese with shrew bread. When they were comfortably settled and eating, Bargle made his report. "We saw the two marl foxes just before noon, chief, west of here, over by Widestream. Then they vanished, right in front of our eyes." Logalog undid his shoulder belt and let his rapier fall to the ground, rubbing the back of a paw wearily across his eyes. "No sign of those rats, or our longboats, I suppose." The shrew named Splicker shrugged. "Never saw 'em, but we tracked their sign, and they're bound west and a point south, chief.
By the seasons, they can paddle boats as well as any shrew can, believe me."
Logalog shook his head despairingly.
"Stands to reason, doesn't it? They're water rats. West and a point south, you say?
Aye, chief, but there's a lot of them, so the log boats'll be overloaded. I saw keel scrapings in the shallows. They can't be traveling very fast, weighted down as they are."
Logalog drained his beaker and sat a while, gnawing worriedly at his lip. The Gwasim watched him in silence, until a scuffle broke out behind his back. Logalog whirled around in time to see a hulking shrew deal the young one who had been eating the watercress a hefty blow. As the young shrew fell back holding his face, the hefty one began to kick him,
rumbling bad-temperedly. "It was you, Dippler, sleeping on guard, while those foxes and rats stole the boats from under your nose, you worthless tailed dragon!"
Logalog was up in a flash. Launching himself sideways, he caught the hefty one a flying double kick to the stomach, sending him sprawling. The chieftain stood over him, quivering with anger.
"Lay a paw near Dippler again, and I'll boot your guts through your backbone. That's if you've got any."
The hefty shrew, who was called Fenno, glared up at his chief, his eyes filled with unspoken rage. Logalog was older, smaller, and lighter than him, but he was not chieftain for nothing. Logalog smiled, nodding back to his rapier on the ground.
"Come on, Fenno. You're a fine big beast. Carrying a blade, too. I'm not armed, but if you figure you're brave enough to carry out the beatings in this tribe, then why not try me? Come on, mate. Let's see what you're made of, eh?"
There was tension in the air as the Gwasim watched both shrews. Then Fenno, still lying flat, placed a paw across his eyes, a sign of submission. A few chuckles broke out from the Gwasim.
"Old Fenno did the sensible thing there, mate."
"Aye, so he did. No beast messes with Logalog. Leastways, no beast that wants to grow old in one piece."
Logalog helped Dippler up. Throwing a paw around the youngster's shoulders, he gestured for silence.
"Hearken now. I don't want any shrew complaining about young Dippler or trying to rough him up. We was all young once, and we all made mistakes, some of them worse than others. Dippler slept on guard and lost our logboats, all six of them. Good craft, too, they were. So the young un'll learn better. He'll try harder. You will, won't you, matey?"
Dippler wiped mud from his bruised face, smiling through his tears.
"I won't let the Gwasim down ever again, chief. That's a promise."
Logalog patted Dippler's back heartily.
"Good feller. Now, Gwasim, here's the bad news. Those boats of ours can only go one way on wide stream, and that way takes them too close to Redwall Abbey for my liking. I know we ain't used to walking, but we've got to get to the Abbey and warn 'em. I never saw water rats in Mossflower afore, but I know that their leaders, those marl foxes, are evil beasts. Magic, too. They've got tools, wood, and carpenters at the Abbey. So the sooner we're there, the quicker we'll get new boats built. Right?"
The bass-voiced shrews roared back agreement gruffly.
"Right."
Logalog smiled as he buckled his rapier back on.
"So what are you sitting round like a crowd of butterflies with wet wings for? Let's get trampin'."
They formed up into six lines, one for the crew of each boat. As they marched away, Bargle called out to Logalog.
"I know we ain't sailing, chief, but could we sing a paddle song to help us keep paw step on the way?"
Logalog nodded and roared out a fast paddle song with the rest as they stamped away through the dim tree aisles of Mossflower.
"Woom chaka oom chaka choom chaka woom. Gwasim, dig your paddle deep. Hurly burly river wide and curly. There's no time to sleep. Woom chaka oom chaka choom chaka woom. Rapid wild and fast do go. Hurly burly river wide and curly. Bend your backs and row. Woom chaka oom chaka choom chaka woom. Keep her bows up in the foam, hurly burly river, wide and curly. Logboat, take us home. Woom chaka oom chaka choom chaka."
The rousing boat song echoed through wooded glades and grassy clearings as Logalog and his Gwasim shrews marched to Redwall. 3. Extract from the writings of old Friar Butty, squirrel recorder of Redwall Abbey in Mossflower Country.
"I had a twinge in my left footpaw a moment back. I hope that's a sign of rain. We could certainly do with a good shower. Everything seems to be drooping or wilting. Badger Mum Crega says 'tis the driest summer she's ever known, and she's seen more summers than the rest of us put together. Redwallers have had to form a chain from the abbey pond to the orchard, bringing pails of water for the thirsty trees and vines that produce our fruits and berries. A pity we haven't more able-bodied creatures. Redwall Abbey seems to be populated by the elders or the very young these last few seasons. I can remember in the times when Abbess Tansy ruled, there seemed to be no end of willing otters, moles, mice, squirrels, and hedgehogs to perform the daily chores of Redwall. But that was a long time back, when I served as an assistant cook in the kitchens under old Mother Buscall. Who would have thought the days would arrive
when I would be called old. Yes, old Friar Butty, that's me. Too old to cook, and far too rheumaticky to serve as abbot, even though there was a time when every beast seemed to keep asking me to take up the position. 'Tis a sad reflection, Redwall Abbey, without abbot or abbess. But that's the way things are this season. Poor old Arvin, who was once Abbey warrior, served as abbot for 3 seasons, after Abbess Tansy had gone to her rest. Unfortunately, he passed on to the sunlit pastures during the spring, having survived a rough winter. So now there is only myself and Badger Mum Cregger, with the good mouse Sister Slowey running the infirmary. Troglo Spearback, our hedgehog cellar-keeper, Diggum and Gerbil, his mole helpers, and Gubbio, who is now foremole. All that is left of our old friends. The sword of Martin, our founder and first abbey warrior, hangs on the wall in Craig's room. His brave guiding spirit is blended into the ancient red sandstone of our beautiful abbey. Seasons have been kind, and peace has reigned here many, many summers. I think it is thanks to the spirit of Martin. Oh, I forgot one other still here from the old days. In fact, I can see him now, from the gatehouse window where I am sitting. Nutwing the Owl. He was one of 3 born here at Redwall. His brother and sister have long flown off, but Nutwing has stayed and remained faithful to the abbey. He is, how shall I put it, an unwise old owl, having great lapses of memory in his latter seasons. You will pardon me, I am sure, but I feel I am about to be lured away from my recording duties. I just hope 'tis nothing too strenuous. The owl waddled right up to the gatehouse window and peered in through tiny thick crystal lens spectacles perched on his beak curve. Is that you, buddy? The old squirrel poked his head out of the open window, facing Nutwing nose to beak. Who else would it be, pushing a quill pen, ink-stained paws, buried among scrolls on a beautiful summer morn like this? Certainly not yourself, you feathered old fraud. Nutwing shook his head absently. No, it wouldn't be me. Don't like writing one little bit. Do you think it's likely to rain soon? Buddy nodded toward the hot blue cloudless sky. I've had one paw twinge today, but that could mean nothing. Look up and tell me what you think. Nutwing flapped his wings resignedly. Sky's too far up for me to see. I don't bother with it. Friar Butty came around outside the gatehouse to where the owl stood. Well, friend, I'm sure you didn't come this far just to chat about the weather. What do you want? Nutwing thought long and hard, blinking and moving his head from side to side. Let me see. Was it something to do with... No, that wasn't it. Perhaps it was... No, I'd forgotten about that. Buddy smiled indulgently. Was it anything to do with strawberries, perhaps? Nutwing looked astonished. How did you know? Because when you flapped your wings, a strawberry fell out on the grass. There it is. It was a giant of a fruit, shiny red, plump, and speckled with seeds. Nutwing grinned happily. Retrieving the strawberry, he gave it to the squirrel. I brought this beauty over for you, friend. They're taking the berries to the kitchen, and your advice is needed. Friar Butty bit into the fruit, wiping juice from his whiskers as he chewed. Oh, delicious! I hope they're all the same quality as this'n. What a wonderful thing a strawberry is. It has a flavor and fragrance all of its own. The taste of a good summer. Right, let's go to the kitchens and see how I can be of help. Badger Mum Cregger was totally blind, though it did not seem to hamper her greatly. She waited at the abbey's main door to greet the pair. Ah, well done, Nutwing. You remembered your errand. Come on, Butty, finish eating that strawberry and get along to the kitchens. The old friar was amazed. But how did you... Redwall's blind Badger Mum forestalled the question. I notice you, because you limp a bit on that rheumatic paw. And any creature with half a nose and 1 ear can tell by the aroma and the sound of chomping when some beast is enjoying a big strawberry. Now hurry along before the Dibbons decide what to do with the entire crop. Gubbio Formole and Sister Slowey had their paws full, trying to control the greedy abbey babes, the Dibbons,
from ravaging the baskets of fruit that were piled up everywhere around the kitchens.
You'm rascal? Get any paws out in yon basket.
Formal lifted a tiny mouse down from the shelf top, where she was rummaging in a basket to find the biggest berries. Sister Slowey menaced two small moles, who were stained from ear to smock with crimson juice, shaking a wooden spoon at them as they stuffed strawberries into their mouths with both paws.
Not another one, do you hear me? Stop immediately!
Through a mouthful of the fruit, one of the mole babes explained patiently to the infirmary sister why they had to complete their self-appointed task.
Nay, marm, us'uns be only heatin' the ones that'll go bad soon.
It'n't our job for the likes of us hinfants.
The sister did not share their viewpoint.
The only things that'll go bad are your tummies. You'll be sick as stuffed frogs, the pair of you. Now stop it this instant.
All the dibbins froze as Craig's voice boomed severely through the kitchens.
Just point out any dibbins who've been pinching strawberries, and I'll deal with them. By the thundering seasons of strife, I will.
The mole babe Wugger tugged Friar Buddy's habit cord and whispered,
"You're Zer Buddy. Don't want ee tell Badger Mom I been pinching strawberries, and I want tell on E."
The old friar winked secretly at Wugger and spoke out loud,
"Craiga, marm, how could you say such things? I'm sure none of the Dibbins would be so villainous as to pinch strawberries. They're merely helping to carry them in and stack the baskets."
A chorus of agreement burst from the Dibbins.
"Yes, Friar be right, marm. Us'uns be good and honest beasts. No pinch of strawberries, not ever."
Craiga nodded solemnly.
"Well, I'm very glad to hear it. Because once, many seasons before any of you were born, we had a Dibbin at Redwall who... Do you remember what happened to him, Sister Slowey?"
Slowey pursed her lips forbiddingly as she continued the tale.
"Oh, I recall that one right enough. He ate strawberries from dawn to dusk on the day of the harvest, never listened to a word when he was told to stop, kept on pinching and scoffing all the biggest and juiciest ones. Guess what happened to him as he was on the stairs to the dormitory?"
Slowey gazed around at the wide-eyed Dibbins, hanging on her every word. Suddenly she clapped her paws sharply and shouted out,
"He went bang! Just like that! Exploded! Was never seen again. Isn't that right, Friar Buddy?"
The old squirrel nodded sadly.
"Ah, that's what happened, sister. You can still see the red mark he left halfway up the stairs. Poor, greedy little mite."
Shocked and horrified, Dibbins unloaded strawberries from their smock pockets back into the baskets, stunned by the fate of the gluttonous Dibbin in that far-gone season. Then they rushed from the kitchens, squeaking and shouting as they headed for the dormitory stairs where the incident was reputed to have taken place. When they had gone, Craiga popped a strawberry into her mouth, chuckling,
"Ha-ha! That story works every summer. I wonder what that bright red mark on the stairs is, though. It feels quite smooth. Probably a lump of quartz in the stone."
Nutwing watched Craiga feel around in the basket beside her for another large strawberry.
I've seen it. A bit too big for a Dibbin. Must have been a greedy badger who wouldn't stop pinching strawberries, eh?"
Troglo Spearback, the cellar-keeper, an immense hedgehog, lumbered in. Stuffing both paws in his wide canvas apron pocket, he grinned and winked at Nutwing.
"Aye, mayhaps 'twere a badger. Now then, old buddy, which ones are mine? Make sure they're good and juicy enough to brew into a barrel of strawberry fizz."
Friar Buddy did his rounds of the baskets, sniffing and prodding gently at the fruit they contained, and marking certain ones with a charcoal stick.
"Those should be enough for you, Troglo. A dozen good baskets. Sister Slowey, you take this one to sweeten up those herb potions you give to sick Dibbins. Brother Melilot?"
A fat dormouse emerged from an unlit oven with scrubbing brush and pail in his paws.
"Last time I let moles make damson jam in my oven. Sticks like glue when it bubbles over. Did you want me, Friar?"
Buddy indicated the unmarked baskets.
"These are all yours. What do you plan on making? Strawberry tarts, obviously. I noticed a pot of red currant jelly cooling on the windowsill as I came in."
Melilot took off his greasy apron and began tying on a freshly laundered one.
"Strawberry tarts for sure, with good short crust pastry and lots of whipped meadow cream on top.
I'll probably do some strawberry and pear flans, too, and a big strawberry trifle, if you'll be good enough to help me, Friar.
Buddy agreed willingly.
Oh, yes, an extra big trifle, with plums and raspberries in it, too.
Every beast began contributing its ideas of what made the perfect trifle.
And lots of flaked almonds and hazelnuts sprinkled on top. I, with a good beaker of elderberry wine poured in.
Be sure to set it in blackberry jelly, with lots of honey sponge slices to make it nice and soggy. Sweet arrowroot custard, too, good and deep.
Brr-her, and Gert Globitz a clotted meadow cream atop of that.
The discussion was interrupted when a stocky older squirrel strode in, a younger one in his wake, both carrying pails in either paw. The older squirrel, Russful, was obviously hot and rather irritated.
Any beast interested in lending a paw to fetch water from the pond for that orchard out?
Glad I'm not the only creature who forgets things.
Russful had been at Redwall less than 3 seasons. He had been a wanderer and a warrior, but when his wife died, he'd come to stay at Redwall, bringing with him his son Danflor, a quiet young squirrel. Both were strong and good workers, but Russful had changed since the death of his wife. He was no longer the happy-go-lucky creature of former days, but was often quick to take offense, and sometimes difficult to get on with. He nodded at the creatures assembled in the kitchen, then turned to Danflor.
"Let's put these pails away and get washed up before lunch, son."
Outside, the abbey pool seemed to cool Russell down a bit. Danflor washed his paws in silence, watching his father sluice water across his face with both paws, blowing and snorting as it entered his nostrils. Danflor glanced up at the sky.
"Wish it had rained, then there'd be no need to carry water, eh?"
Russell wriggled a paw in one ear to get the water out.
"Aye, son. Wouldn't have been a bad idea for some beast to tell us the orchard had enough water and all."
Danflor shrugged good-naturedly.
"It's not the badger mum's fault," she forgot. "She carried as much water as both of us earlier on."
Russell nodded grudging agreement.
"Maybe she did. But this place needs a leader, an abbot or an abbess. I liked old Abbot Arvin. When he was alive, things seemed to run smoother."
Danflor dried his paws on the grass.
"That's 'cause Arvin was a warrior one time, just like you. Probably the reason you got on so well together."
Russell smiled one of his rare smiles and flicked a pebble at his son.
"True enough, Dan. Me and you are the only warriors left in Redwall now. And we get on well together, don't we?"
Danflor caught the pebble and skimmed it out over the pond.
"Of course we get on, 'cause I'm your son and you're my dad. But I've never been in a fight or seen battle, so you couldn't really call me a warrior. I was only a divin before we came here, you know."
Russell's eyes hardened. He took his son's paw and held it tight.
"But you are a warrior, Danflor. I know it. The blood of warriors runs in your veins. Never forget that, son."
They rose together and walked toward the orchard, where lunch was being served in the shade of the trees. Danflor paced easily beside his father.
"But Redwall Abbey's the most peaceful place a creature could wish to be. How will I know when I become a warrior?"
Russell stopped and stared at him.
"Your name is Danflor Raguba. In ancient squirrel language, the Raguba was the greatest warrior in all the land. I am called Raguba, as my father was before me. When danger threatens and you have to face the foe beast, then you will know you are Raguba, bravest of the brave."
Lunch was a fairly simple one. Sliced fruits, apple, pear, greengage, and plum, some fresh-baked scones and damson jam, and dandelion and burdock cordial, foamy and cold from Troglo cellar hog's vaults. Russell sat chatting with Troglo, while Danflor chose to sit next to Krega. The badger mum reached out a huge paw and ran it gently over his face.
"You are troubled, Dan. What's going on in that mind of yours?"
The young squirrel sucked foam noisily from the top of his beaker.
"Not so much troubled as puzzled, Marm. They say you were once a great warrior. My father likes the company of warriors, but he never seems to talk at any length with you. Why's that?"
Krega shrugged lightly, her blind eyes facing straight ahead.
"Probably because I never talk about my seasons as a fighter. That is all in the dead past to me. Peace and this beautiful abbey are what matter in my life now. Do you like Redwall, Dan?"
"Aye, I like it a lot. It's really home to me."
Krega smiled, nodding her great striped head.
Good. 'Tis my home, too, though I've never seen it with my eyes. I was blinded in battle before I ever arrived at Redwall. Do me a favor, Dan. Look at it and tell me what you see. You can be my eyes. Go on. Let's see if we both live in the same place.
Danflor held the blind Badger Mum's paw as he spoke. A path runs from north to south, and Redwall stands by the side of it. Mossflower Wood grows around the north and east walls, and partially on the south. A big main threshold gate faces the path, with a little gatehouse just inside. The outer walls are high, thick, and solid, built from old red sandstone, like the rest of the abbey. Battlements and a wide wall top run round the outer walls, making it like a safe fortress. Inside there are gardens and lawns, a pond, and this orchard. But in the middle of it all stands the abbey. It is a huge old building, very high, with a weather vane atop the great long roof, and marvelous stained glass windows, great arches and columns. Built against one side is a bell tower with two bells inside, which are tolled at dawn, midday, twilight, and softly at midnight. I like the bells. They have a warm, friendly sound, as if they're watching over us. Gregor squeezed the young squirrel's paw gently. You have a good eye and a kind heart, Danflor. Your picture of our abbey is the same as the one I carry in my imagination. While they had been talking, the sky was starting to cloud over from the southeast, gradually at first, but the clouds increased as a breeze sprang up to drive them along, blotting out the blue summer noon. Friar Butty felt his footpaw twinge again.
Ah, I knew it. We'll have rain before long, friends.
Splat, splack. Two large raindrops hit the leaves of a plum tree, one of them rolling down to burst on poor Mole Gubbio's nose.
E rain bain't a-waitin' on your word, Butty. It be your right now.
As the mole spoke, long-awaited rain came splattering and battering suddenly down, a proper summer storm, driven sideways on the wind. Thunder rumbled afar, with a distant lightning flash flaring briefly in the east. Dust turned immediately to mud. Dry, yellowed grass was flattened against the wet earth, and a tremendous din of countless large drops pattered against foliage and rapping upon tree trunks as it hissed around the abbey, virtually drowned out all other sound. Brother Melilot and Russell swept the linen spread off the ground, and knotting it loosely into a large sack with foodstuffs and dishes inside, they bore it off between them to the abbey. Craig of Badgermom boomed out over the din.
Every beast inside!
Ambling sideways, she shielded many elders and young ones with her bulk. Sister Slowey tugged at Troglo's apron, rain pouring down her face into her open mouth as she called to him.
Mr. Troglo, there's two Dibbons not here.
Danflor joined them, his fur plastered flat by the downpour.
That'll be the two mole babes, Marm. Wugger and Blinny. They went off toward the gatehouse as my father and I were coming up from the pond.
Troglo Spearback shooed his sister Slowey off to the abbey.
You get yourself indoors, Marm. Me and young Dan will find them.
Danflor and Troglo dashed across the lawns, heads down, footpaws sloshing and slapping through the wet grass, as the thunder boomed closer and a great fork of jagged lightning rent the sky asunder. Both creatures were driven flat against the gatehouse wall by the wind, and stood there a moment, regaining their breath, before fighting their way around to the gatehouse door. It was flapping back and forth, for Buddy had left it open, and they hurried inside out of the storm. Troglo cast a quick eye about.
Little rascals. They ain't here, Dan, and we never passed them on the way here.
The young squirrel wiped rain from his eyes on a window curtain.
Let's think. I know. Maybe they're up on the wall top. Dibbons are always being told not to go up there, so that's the likely place for them to be.
Cheating rain swept the ramparts, dancing across the stones and gurgling noisily out of small downspouts, so heavy that visibility was virtually nil. Troglo and Danflor were running almost doubled up past the north battlements when a peal of thunder exploded with frightening force directly overhead. In the crackle of chain lightning that followed, the hedgehog pointed to the northeast gable end, and the two small figures huddled there.
Ha-ha! There they be!
It was hard to imagine two more saturated and frightened little creatures. The mole babes wailed and threw themselves at their rescuers.
Wow! How! Us'uns be gertly drowned, zers!
Troglo untied his stout canvas apron and placed it over the Dibbons,
Then between them, he and Danflor picked them up and started down the east wall steps, watching carefully where they trod as the steps were awash. Reaching the lawn, they skirted the rear of the abbey, almost blown around the corner of the bell tower by the increasing wind. Wilger and Blenny held tight to the canvas apron covering them as it ballooned and flapped. More thunder banged sharply overhead, and lightning sheeted the scene, illuminating it momentarily in an eerie white flash. Krega and Slowey were waiting at the door, holding it open against the weather's onslaught, when the four of them rushed inside, breathless and bedraggled. Sister Slowey gave Danflor and Troglo a towel apiece.
"You found them. Thank goodness. Where were they?"
The hedgehog rubbed vigorously at his face.
"Just where you'd expect the rogues to be, sister. Top of the bloomin' wall at the northeast corner, wetter than waterweed, and yellin' to be saved from a drownin'. Anyways, they're safe now."
As the little group passed through the great hall, more lightning flashed outside, throwing cascades of bright pattern from the colored stained glass onto the worn stone floor. A fire was burning in the cavern hole, where all the Redwallers were gathered, towels flapping wetly about and steam rising from damp fur. Sister Slowey and Gerbol Cellarmole dried the two dibbins off, none too gently. Wugger's head shook from side to side as the sister rubbed at it, scolding.
"Time and time again, you've been told not to go up on that wall-top to play. So what were you both doing up there, eh? Speak up."
"Her usins was only talking to the funny beasts in the woods, marm."
"Funny beasts? What funny beasts?"
"There were two of them, marm. They was white and blark and blue, a wearing girt cloakers."
Danflor had trouble keeping a straight face. Wugger was obviously making up some kind of story to justify his visit to the wall-top.
"Two funny creatures, all white and black and blue, wearing great cloaks? What did you say to them?"
"Usins didn't say naught. They asked if I'd come down and open a little wall-gate for em."
"And what did you say?"
"Her usins was a-going to, when he rain comed. Then usins was too affrighted to move."
"So what happened to the two funny beasts?"
Wugger spread both paws and blinked.
"They am goned. Just vanished like that, sir."
Danflor smiled and winked at Troglo, who nodded understandingly at the mole babe as if it all made sense.
"Oh, right you be, Wugger. The two funny beasts just vanished, you say?"
Wugger nodded, his little face completely serious.
"Aye, sir, that's right."
Sister Slowey wagged a severe paw under his nose.
"You've eaten too many strawberries and made yourself ill. Straight up to bed for you, young mole. You too, Blinny. Both of you have had quite enough for one day, pinching strawberries, playing on the wall in that thunderstorm, and telling a pack of fibs. Now, not another peep out of either of you. Straight upstairs this instant."
Looking the picture of dejection, the two tiny moles, fur still standing up from their toweling, were led off to the dormitories by Sister Slowey. Friar Buddy smiled at Nutwing.
"Black, white, and blue creatures with great cloaks that vanish into thin air. What'll they think of next?"
The owl dried his spectacles off on a towel corner.
"I blame their elders. Telling tales of strawberry thieves who just went bang and were never seen again, save for the red patch on the stairs. Little wonder that Dibbins grow up telling fibs after hearing stories like that."
Outside, the mid-afternoon resembled night as the storm roared around Redwall Abbey, lashing its ancient stones and causing the mossflower treetops to sway wildly in its grip. Snug inside their comfortable abbey, the creatures of Redwall, now warm and dry, took their ease in safety and calm. 4. Janglor Swifteye unfastened the tent canvas from his back and tossed it expertly across two rocks that stood a small distance apart on a knoll overlooking a storm-swollen stream. Rimrose and Song weighted the canvas down with flat slabs of sandstone placed on its edges where they lapped the ground, working quickly, their heads bowed against the pelting rain. Grandma Elayo hurried into the covered space between the rocks and swept out the wet leaves, creating a dry floor inside the makeshift shelter. Jangler dropped the last large slab on the rear of the canvas, making sure it was stretched taut so that it would not fill up and belly inward upon them. Straightening up, he blew rainwater from the tip of his nose, blinking hard against the scything curtains of wind-driven wetness. Rimrose and Song were already inside under cover, and Elio called out urgently to her son,
"Get you in here fast, before that thunder bangs again."
Dropping on all fours, the big squirrel scrambled into the confined shelter space, the others moving aside to make room for him. Elio jumped instinctively as a thunderclap sounded overhead. Jangler put a paw about her comfortingly.
"There now, Mom, no need to be jumping about like a toad on a cinder. Thunder won't harm ye."
But Grandma Elio was not to be placated.
"Maybe thunder won't, but lightning will. Take that knife of yourn and bury it, son. Lightning has a way of finding knives."
Jangler knew there was a lot of truth in old wives' tales. Drawing the long blade he carried sheathed sideways across the back of his wide belt, he scratched a shallow trough, placed the knife inside, and covered it. Lying flat on his stomach, he rested his chin on both paws, watching the stream being peppered with torrential rain as it pounded furiously on its course. Song joined him, while Rimrose and Elio snuggled down at the back of the shelter. Jangler nodded in their direction.
"Take a tip from them, Song, and rest while you can. Not else to do but sleep this storm out."
The young squirrel watched the rain glumly.
"When's it going to stop so we can get to Redwall Abbey?"
Her father shrugged.
"It'll stop when 'tis ready to. Must be getting towards eventide now. If it ceases later on, we may be able to travel by night. You have a good nap. I'll wake you if it clears up."
Song tried to sleep, but the longer the bad weather continued, the less she felt like sleeping. Twilight lent a strange aspect to woodland and stream, and a weird gray-yellow nimbus hovered over the bank sides, cast through with a dull lilac glow. Gradually she began to drift toward slumber, lulled by the sound of rainfall and swishing treetops. But then a sharp movement from her father brought her back to instant alertness.
"Be silent, Song, and don't move. Look at the stream."
A long logboat thundered by on the roiling current. Seated in the prow were two marl foxes, identical to the two they had encountered, and large, scrawny water rats, some brown, others black or gray, packed the boat from stem to stern. The majority of the rats were paddling oars, skimming and sculling to keep the craft upright and on course, while the rest were kept busy bailing out stream and rainwater with any implements they could lay claw to. Jangler muttered to Song out of the side of his mouth,
"Just as well they can't hear your grandma snoring in this little lot. Be still now. Here comes another."
A second logboat forged along in the wake of the first. Jangler moved forward, poking his head out into the rain, peering upstream.
"There's more of 'em. Another four, if I ain't mistaken. Never seen aught like this afore. I'm going to take a look. You stay put, Song. You know where my dagger is if you need it. Don't wake your mom or grandma. What they don't know can't hurt 'em. Be back soon."
Not far from the knoll where they had camped, a big gnarled crack willow overhung part of the stream. Jangler Swifteye climbed it with surprising speed and grace for a squirrel of his size and weight. Skipping nimbly out along one of the main limbs that bent over the water, he tested it for firmness. Two more logboats had passed beneath the willow, their occupants unaware of the presence of a squirrel overhead. Jangler looped his tail and footpaws firmly around the sturdy bough, hanging downward almost as if he were part of the tree. Another logboat bobbed past on the turbulent waters. He let it sail by beneath him, noting that all the vessels were packed with water rats, but the only marl foxes were the two in the lead boat. Unwinding the sling from his waist, Jangler readied himself as the final craft shot toward the willow, a foaming bow wave curling either side as it plied the water. Three rats in the stern were bailing busily. As the logboat sped past beneath the watching Jangler, the hindmost rat bent to scoop up a bowl full of water. Suddenly a noose settled around his neck, and a paw clamped around his mouth like a vise. The rat's footpaws were hauled swiftly clear of the scuppers, and the logboat shot on without him, his companions not even noticing his departure. Jangler flopped the water rat up over the willow limb like a landed fish, dealing him a sharp blow between ear and jaw side. Working efficiently, he sat him on the branch, whipped the sling from the stunned rodent's neck, and bound his middle to the tree. A soft moan escaped the rat's lips as he began to come around. Jangler patted his cheek playfully.
"Hush a by now, me old cully. You sit there a while until you're ready and willing to do a bit of talking."
Song watched her father emerge out of the sheeting rain. He was carrying a bundle and whistling cheerfully between his two front teeth. One of the lazy hooded eyes winked slyly at her as he ducked to enter the shelter.
Found some nice dry pine wood back there. Must be the only bit of timber left in Mossflower that ain't wet this evening.
Song unearthed the knife and took tinder and flint from their pack. Striking the flint against the spine of the blade, she blew softly on the bright sparks that fell on the dry mossy tinder. A thin blue column of smoke rewarded her efforts, followed by a glow and a tiny flame. Jangler began adding pine splinters until they had sufficient fire going to pile on some of the pine billets. Wakened by the smell of wood smoke, Rimrose held her paws out to the flame gratefully.
A nice fire. Would you two like something to eat?
Grandma Alayo's voice came from the back of the shelter.
Aye, us three would like a bite if you don't mind.
The last of the provisions was made into an acceptable meal. Song sliced up the final piece of Rimrose's traveling fruit and honey cake, while her grandma brewed a kettle of mint and comfrey tea. Rimrose had saved 4 oatcakes and a small wedge of cheese. She toasted the cheese and oatcakes together. The family sat by the fire, staring out into the rain-swept night as they ate. Later, Jangler took out his flute and played, encouraging Song to sing.
I once knew an ant, and I knew him right well. This ant, he lived in a hazelnut shell. He had relations to count by the score. They used to come knocking on his tiny door.
One was called Distant, he lived far away. Another was Pleasant, he'd bid you good day. A third was Constant, he was never away. Then there was Hesitant, not sure he'd stay. And poor old Reluctant, not sure too. And one called Valiant, stout and true. Now I'll tell you the reason they all came to call, 'cause this ant was the most important of all. As the final echo of the ballad died away, a gruff voice called from the stream bank, causing Elio to jump with fright.
Well sung, young missy. You've got a fair pretty voice on yer.
Song immediately grabbed for her father's knife, but Jangler stayed her paw, a smile flitting across his half-closed eyes as he replied,
Aye, better than any old Scragford shrew could sing, I'll wager.
Surrounded by a party of Gwasom, Logalog strode up to the shelter.
Ha! Jangler Swifteye, you great fat branch bounder. I heard you was dead 3 seasons back.
Jangler shook his old friend's paw heartily.
Logalog Gwasom, you big-bellied brook beast. I heard you died more than 4 seasons ago.
The shrew threw a paw about the squirrel's shoulders.
Well, we must be the 2 healthiest ghosts in the woodlands.
Introductions were made all around. The shrews joined their old logboat sails, which they carried with them, to Jangler's shelter. Using oars and dead branches, and taking advantage of nearby bushes, they soon extended the covered area. Logalog sat by the fire, gratefully accepting a bowl of tea from Alayo, while he told Jangler of what had befallen him and his tribe. The squirrel listened intently, then told Logalog of his first encounter with the marl foxes. The shrew scratched his ear thoughtfully.
Do you think the 2 you met are the same 2 who stole our boats?
Jangler shook his head emphatically.
Impossible. We were too far apart. But I saw the 2 foxes that took your boats this very evening.
Logalog's paw grabbed his rapier hilt.
You saw them? Where?
They sailed right by here, round about twilight. 6 boatloads of them, water rats, with the 2 foxes sitting forward in the first boat that passed. So I went to take a look.
So tell me, what did you see?
The squirrel's long lashes flickered idly.
Wasn't much to see. I figured they wouldn't stop to chat with me, so I worked the old rear ambush and captured one.
Logalog leapt up and drew his rapier.
You captured one? Why didn't you tell me this earlier?
Jangler rose with a sigh.
Because you called me fat and said I was 3 seasons dead. Come on, stop looking so injured, and I'll take you to him.
The water rat was fully conscious, but his face showed little emotion as Jangler loosed the bonds and hauled him down from the crack willow. Logalog's rapier point was swiftly at the rodent's throat. The shrew's voice dripped menace.
Now, matey, you're going to do a bit of fast talking. Who are these marl foxes? How many of them is there? And what are you doing in these parts? Make it easy on yourself and speak.
The rat's face was blank, his eyes devoid of either fear or hatred of his captors. Jangler prodded the rat's chest with a hard paw.
Where do you come from? Are you from the same place as those foxes?
I hear they come from a secret island at the center of a great lake.
Tell us about it. Who rules there? The rat's expression never changed, though Logalog noticed that his paws were trembling visibly.
The shrew leaned close to Janglor and spoke in a whisper, so the water rat would not hear them.
What do you make of this one, mate? Mayhap he's a mute. Look out!
Before either creature could stop him, the rat dashed back a few paces and flung himself into the swift-flowing stream. Logalog and Janglor rushed to the water's edge and stood helplessly, watching as the rodent was swept away on the wild racing surge. It was far too rough and speedy, even for a water rat, and his paws struggled feebly against the surging mass until a broken rowan tree came hurtling like an arrow on the current. It struck the unfortunate rat, and he sank instantly. Logalog screwed up his face in disgust. "'Tis always bad when a life's wasted for no reason. Even the life of a vermin like that, and—" Janglor fastened the sling back around his waist. "'I wouldn't say the rat's life was wasted for no reason, mate. We mightn't know why he did it, but no creature could live in that current, so he knew what he was doing. He must have been really terrified if he killed himself rather than betray any information.' The shrew stood staring at the spot where the rat had gone down. "'You're right, Swift Eye. Let's go and get some sleep. Mayhap we'll find the answer to all this when we reach the Abbey of Redwall.'" The wandering Noonvale companion's cart was stuck up to its axles in mud. Florian wrung rein from the hems of his frock coat and bellowed mournfully, "'Oh, calamity, folly, and woe unto us!' Abroad on a night like this, in the midst of a hurricane. Nay, a typhoon, a veritable deluge. And now, to cap it all, we are sinking slowly into the muddy oblivion of a bottomless quagmire. Brave hearts and faithful friends, 'tis a night for lamentations. Ooh, Lacabalite, what? Runktip tried unsuccessfully to block a rip in the canvas of the covered cart with a pennant he had plastered with mud.
Aye, we could do with luck in this day right enough. Pesky rain'll drive me off my spikes if it don't stop.
Loracle, who was caked in mud up to the waist from trying to get the cart unstuck, grinned mirthlessly.
Cheer up. We're only lost, starving, and likely to be drowned by morning. At least there's plenty of water to drink out there.
Rupe twitched his nose at the otter.
I bain't thirsty, thank ye, sir. Though tain't ye weather I'm worried over, 'tis Dwapple. The young maester's gone very quiet, and I doan't like it.
Deesum instantly leapt to the defense of her charge.
You're quite heartless, Mr. Roop. See, the dear little chap is slumbering innocently.
Alicum, the other otter brother, who was trying to sleep at the same end of the cart as the mouse babe, shifted his position, muttering,
Slumbering innocently? The wretch is snoring like thunder, and he keeps trying to eat my tail in his dreams.
Muggle flung her soggy turban at the otter.
Grr, don't ye munchin' eatin' again. My poor stomach is a-growglin' and a-rowglin' like thunder and lightnin'.
Dejectedly, Florian pulled out his battered one-string fiddle and plucked at it experimentally.
Tcha! Confounded wet weather's knocked it all out of tune, what?
Nevertheless, he scraped away at it with a tattered bow and began singing a song that he composed as he went along.
Dear mother, I am hungry, hungry, and starving as well to boot. Oh, to be back home in your orchard, so full of delicious fruit. If I perish and die before morn, and my last thought will be of you, and a smile on father's whiskers, and a whackin' great bowl of stew, are grandpa's teeth still missin', the way I'm missin' you? You're the nicest ma a son could have, and I've had quite a few. Fare thee well, my dearest parents, for quite soon now I must die. But if I get home before midnight, don't let Grandma eat all the pie.
Florian's song was abruptly cut off when a soggy tunic flopped in his face. He removed the offending article, which had become tangled with his ears and whiskers, and held it up.
Which wrought her through this? Own up immediately, what?
He demanded with an air of injured dignity. The troop stared at him in blank innocence. Baby Dwapple shook with malicious mirth, but kept his eyes tight shut, pretending to be asleep. He even threw in a couple of lusty snores for good effect. Deesum stroked his head fondly, murmuring,
So young, yet so talented. One day you will be a great actor.
Night closed in around the little cart in the woodland,
as the rain continued to batter down. 5. The lake was so huge that no beast standing on any part of the shoreline could tell that its sweeping vastness held an island at its center. Not even birds, because they knew better than to try to fly across the lake. Whipping up the surface into a frenzy of crested waves, the storm raged throughout the night hours. Rain howled like a wild thing, driven by the winds. From the billowing masses of black and purple bruised cloud that obscured the moon, thunder crashed and lightning ripped down in a flickering dance across the heaving waters. Inside Castle Marl, a grim-faced band of brown-liveried water rats were trying to drown out the storm noise with music. They plucked at stringed instruments, struck small gongs, and played strange melodies on flutes and pipes of varying sizes. From cellars to attics, they paraded up and down the fortress's many ramps. There were no stairs inside Castle Marl, just steeply sloping ramps, winding or angled everywhere. The odd group followed a curtained palanquin, a long box-like affair with silken tasseled drapes around its sides, borne on four thick poles running beneath its length and width. Over a score and a half rats bore the odd conveyance, treading with carefully measured paces so that the box was kept perfectly steady at all times, and by the side of the palanquin strode a marl fox. When a sharp tapping noise issued from within the covered box, the carrier stopped moving instantly. A harsh, rasping voice sounded from behind the silken curtains.
Lantour! Tell them to play louder! I will not be disturbed by weather noises, for I am mightier, more powerful than storms. These fools must play louder. The storm stopped me sleeping, so they must outplay it. That is my command.
The marl fox Lantour strode back to the musicians, who had already heard the order. Nevertheless, she repeated it in the imperious tone of one used to commanding others. End of side one. To continue, turn the cassette over.